We're talking about the realm of the spiritual. And in your culture, you say spiritual experiences are necessary for an effective management of reality.
Yes. I think that this is where the perspective of Aboriginals, Indigenous peoples, with a reputation for spirituality, I think it will in the future be a necessary complement to the survival of the human being. I think science, with its great wonders and powers as a technological advancement tool, serves to provide certain necessities for the human being, but none of the values that are necessary for survival on this planet. And I think that values can be derived, the authenticity, the legitimacy of values can be derived not from ideologies, but from spiritual quests, where human beings can relearn or remember, in fact, what was always the legacy of the human being, that the human being has a legacy in the spiritual realm that many communities have forgotten. That, but if they strive to remember, they can, and they can have access to that same kind of information that our ancestors were privy to. And they did not always manage successfully, but most of the time they were able to do so.
If they strive to remember, and if they're humble, which is an important part of it.
Yes, and that can be a difficult task for many of us.
Mm-hmm. You say to the Nuchanulth people that generosity is not just a good trait, but is actually a law. It's akin to gravity. Generosity.
I find it exciting that I think it's possible to subject some of the statements that I make in the book to an investigation. Some investigations have already been conducted about prayer, for example, where people will pray, the double-blind experiment kind of thing, where people will pray specifically in one way for a plant, in a creative way, and destructively for another plant, and watch what happens to those plants, where one will shrivel and die and the other will blossom.
Or even a dish of bacteria.
A dish of bacteria, yes. And there are other kinds of experimentation that can be done that are very pragmatic, such as the analysis of brain chemistry, the analysis of what happens in the brain. And I know that, relatively speaking, very little is still known about our brains. There's still a lot more research to be done. But nevertheless, a great deal of information is already known. And so what can be done is to analyze brain chemistry while in certain states of conditions that can be identified as spiritual. And there can be groups of people that can participate in this kind of experimentation. And when it's replicated over and over again, when it's very rigorous from a scientific perspective, a lot of things can be learned about a relationship between the physical and spiritual realm. Things that we learned as Nuchanulth people over millennia and proved and designed our lifeways, our communities, our governance system, our management of resources from the findings of Usumpch.
I would love for you to paint us a mental picture. How would something like generosity, for example, be proven to be something that is necessary for good health and well-being? And how would one do that using the Vision Quest process?
There are different kinds of research. I forgot the technical name, quasi... never mind. There's research where you look back and you examine data, historical data, the experiences of people that can testify about certain outcomes from spiritual activity. The activity of generosity, for example, I would classify as a spiritual activity. And so one can interview any thousands of families of people who practice generosity. And probably would have to be a lot of indigenous peoples, maybe a lot of Christian people, or those religions that have generosity as part of their teachings. examine those people, you know, and of course, not examining the religion, just examining the practice.
And the experience of the people.
And the experience. So that's one kind of study. The another kind of study would be to have people participate willingly, as they do in many other kinds of experimentation. And even people, for example, that aren't in the habit of giving may want to participate in this and to test this proposition that generosity always works, that generosity never fails. It never has failed a people that were managed to survive in spite of famine, in spite of all kinds of problems that crop up naturally in existence, but did not deter them from this law that we call generosity. So one can then do a long-term kind of research in this way and test the results. Okay, did you suffer, you know, or what degree did you suffer as a result of giving, or did you benefit from it? And so you will find, I'm certain, that, for example, even in monetary funds, if some people in Christian societies give 10% of their earnings, and some with greater faith will give a larger percentage, up to 75%. Can you believe it? You give 75% of your money away regularly, and not only do you maintain your wealth increases as a result.
It's interesting. On page 123, you have a long list of potential things that could be researched. Do some spiritual experiences require more effort than others? Under what conditions are creative spiritual forces stronger than destructive forces? And so on and so forth. It's a great passage, and if we had more time, I'd ask you to read that. How does a song lose its power away from the place where it came from? In other words, how much power would one of your healing songs in your territory have in South America or Europe?
A song, songs are products of the environment in which they are created. And so they take their energy, then their power within that context. And when you take anything out of context, then it is often disempowered. So secret knowledge, for example, when something is meant to be secret, and then it is divulged, then it loses its power. And that is a principle that was learned in our societies. There are some things that are meant to be secret, and when they are exposed, then they lose their power. They are disempowered. So when some people talked about our Tlukwana ceremony, then the elements of it were misinterpreted because they were placed in a scientific context. They were placed in a different worldview context. They were placed in an environment where it could not live. The Tlukwana could not survive in that environment. It thrives in an Achanult environment. It's dynamic, and one can see wonders. And lately we have, in the performance of a Tlukwana, experienced wonders, just as our ancestors did.
One last question. Is the environmental crisis we find the Earth in, with global warming and constant war and shootings here in the United States, another school shooting recently, is this simply the maturation of a phase?
I'm not sure simply. It would appear to be simple, I think that it's a much more complex phenomenon we're observing. But certainly, the abuse of an environment, what we understand about cycles, that when we send out good, we receive good. When we send out bad, we receive bad. Whatever cycle we begin, that it just goes around. So what goes around comes around, I think, is a street phrase that's very apt for an Aboriginal perspective.
And the mountains and the nature will get the last word.
The mountains and nature will get the last word, yes.
It's been a delight to have you on the program. Thank you so much for your great work here, and continued success.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Umik, Dr. E. Richard Atleo. His new book is Tsawwaq, A New Cha-Nulth Worldview. And you can find that paperback version on UBC Press.